So, gentlemen, good morning, and we are continuing with the Yishar Cheshbon HaNefesh. And last week we did the first three out of the 30, how a person should analyze the situation in the world, and the world Hashem made for us, to appreciate and to recognize our responsibilities. The fourth Cheshbon is Azoy. He says, the fourth cheshbon, until now we're discussing the physical world and how persons should appreciate how well and how perfectly Hashem formed us physically, and appreciate that. And now he turns to the spiritual world and he says that we should appreciate our spiritual perfection. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a Torah. We should appreciate the great gift that Hashem gave us, the Torah. Unfortunately, we take the Torah for granted, and we think we're doing Hashem a favor by coming to a shir. We're doing Him a favor. So come to Chofetz Chabad, well, it's the time we go for learning. God will definitely give me parnasa, because I'm a good boy. But the truth is that, of course, Hashem did us a big favor, and not that we're doing Him a favor. They called the Torah, Mechubedes Umehemna. We have such a glorious Torah and such a true Torah, a Torah we can rely upon. The Torah was designed to take away our blindness and to dissipate our stupidity. That's a good word for us. Sichlus. We're a bunch of fools, believe it or not. Without the Torah, we are ignorant fools. And the Torah was designed to open our eyes, to see the truth of the world, and to give us some seichel to deal with the world. Otherwise, we are mamish idiots. And the main thing we're supposed to open our eyes up is, because nothing will make our lives as successful as to know what the will of Hashem is. And only the Torah can open up our eyes to know what He wants from us. What in the world did He create us for? Why in the world did He bother making this whole world? So the Torah tells us about the truth about Hashem, who He is, as much as a human being can grasp. And what are our obligations to Hashem? And if we know our obligations, it will bring us to Osher Mishnei Olamim. We will have good fortune in two worlds, in this world and the next. And it's impossible to have good fortune in any of these worlds without knowing the Torah. Like it says, Torah is Hashem Tamima, Meshivas Nafesh. Eid is Hashem Namana, Machkimas Pesi. Gudi Hashem Yesharim, Mesam Chelei. Eid is Hashem Namana, Machkimas Pesi. In this world, Hashem, His way is true. It makes foolish people in this world wise. And Bekudi Hashem Yisharim Basam Chalev. It also makes us joyous. And a person to think to himself, what would be if I would be an ignoramus? I never would have gotten a Jewish education. I wouldn't have been zocher to go to yeshiva, and I would be a person who suddenly, when I'm 35 years old, I wake up, I become a Baal Tshuva, and this wonderful rabbi enters into my life, and he starts teaching me Aleph Beis. Doesn't teach me Mishnah Berurah, Gemara. I'm not holding that. I'm an absolute ignoramus. I don't know the first thing about Judaism. He teaches me before Aleph Beis that there's a God, that there's a Torah. I never heard of the Torah, never heard of God. I'm like most of the Jews in America, majority of Jews. So it's happened many times, though, Baruch Hashem, that somebody in later years suddenly discovers Torah. A nice, kind rabbi comes into his life, and the rabbi teaches him from scratch. And makes him into a Talmud Chacham. Makes him amish into a well-versed Torah Jew. So, are there any words? There's no words, there's nothing that the beneficiary, the former ignoramus, can do to repay his Rebbe. He appreciated so much what he did for him. You took me on Mama, I knew nothing. I didn't know what world's all about. I always thought that life is, that Shabbos is for ball games. and that Sundays is for shopping, and then the rest of the week is for making money. And suddenly you're talking about what Shabbos is all about, what Sunday is all about, what the week is all about. I never knew anything. So you made me about tshuva. My whole life changed. I'm a different person. So I have no words. I'm born again. There's no way. There's no words of praise, and there's nothing that a person can do to thank the rabbi who taught him the Torah. So think for a second what we would look like in this world without Torah. I mean, some of us actually, they think about it all the time. You know, I'd rather be without this Torah, you know. I feel it's a pain in the neck that I was born an Orthodox Jew. And actually, I would do quite well without the Torah. There's a lot of things I'd like to do, but this religion gave me a conscience, darn it, and I can't do what I really want to do. That's what some people think, that their religion's not so great. But a person is sincere and thinks about it and says, boy, what would I be? I'd be a goy. Imagine what I'd be if I'd be a goy. What are we doing on Sunday morning, 10 to 9 this Sunday morning? I'd probably be sleeping. I'd probably be getting over a hangover from last night's binge down in Manhattan, someplace in the village, and what I was doing. And who knows, I would have been taking drugs last night or something. Who knows what I've been doing last night and today. Who knows what I've been doing in my life today. Imagine maybe a goy, I would have no Torah. What a life, what a life. We have behemoth. What a life without Torah. So the person starts thinking, what would I be without Torah? It's Hashem Tamima. Who would I be without the Torah, without the mitzvahs, without Shabbos, without tefillin? What would I look like? What would I look like? It's probably the biggest problem we have in America again, is that no one ever seems to be so upset about the thought of it. You know, in Europe, really, in Europe, a Yid and a Goy, the chasm, the abyss, was so wide and yawning. A Yid, it was mamish impossible. The thought of a Goy was a different world than a Yid, and he had no derech eretz whatsoever for the Goy, even a rich Goy, or a prestigious Goy, even the parrots. General Yidden were totally repulsed by the idea of being a Goy. It's shegetz, the word shegetz, I mean, that's a Yiddishism. Shegetz means a shegetz means a reptile, it means a lizard, it means an insect. It's shegetz, shakei saksenu. It's a Yid would pass by a church, a Yid would never admire the architectural beauty of the church. Yid understood that Zdiklov, he didn't walk on the same side of the street as the church, he walked the other side of the street. He gave it, and when the guy was looking, he gave at least a symbolic spit, shakesh, shakzenu, ta'if, ta'enu, ki cheirem hu. Yid wouldn't, how many shalas do I give at people that are going to Rome? He said, okay, Rabbi, I go to the Vatican, can I go see the churches there, St. Peter's, St. Paul's, St. Stephen's, is it okay? When in Russia, can I go to St. Basil's Basilica and see all the wonders of St. Basil's outside the Kremlin? Everyone today wants to know everything, see everything, do everything. And you know, the season's coming now, and all these nice catalogs with the Xmas things, you know, and all the, and they're into the jingle bells, you know, the jingle bells. It's hard for us to get out of this in this country. Even not this country, the whole world today, England, look at France, every place. The world today, the Yidden and the Goyim, we don't see the Goyim as being something like impossible. I can't imagine myself a Goy. We very well do imagine ourselves. And even us Torah Jews. But if we think a little harder, and think a little harder, how terrible it would be to be at the Torah Akdaisha, then we would appreciate the Torah. So this is what he says the fourth meditation should be, how much we should appreciate Hashem giving us a Torah. Imagine how much we appreciate again our Rebbe. And we should give Hashem thanks every day. Mamash when we daven, we should make the bricks of Torah properly. This is one of the biggest opportunity lost every day, is that we don't make the bricks of Torah with enough passion and enough feeling. The bricks of Torah, don't do it on the run. Don't do any brachas on the run. Sit down, you get up in the morning, and you make the bricks of Torah with kavana, take a sitter out, if necessary, to slow you down, and make a birkas HaTorah, there are three of them by the way, and make the birkas HaTorah with kavon, and we say, v'harav no Hashem elokeinu, Hashem makes sweet, v'harav no Hashem elokeinu, the face of Rasul b'finu, the words of Torah in my mouth, right, and v'niyah nachnum, and you daven for your children, how can a parent not daven with children, how can a parent expect of any siyat d'shmai with children, unless they wet their sitter with tears every day, at least three times a day? How can you have any aslacha for children? How can the children get any nacha, real nacha, as you cry over them? That's like the minimum a parent owes his children, to cry over them every day when you say the brick is a tyrant. So these are the things to think about. He says the pasuk until Mo'ahati Tarasecha Kolayam Isichasi. How much I love the Torah. The proof that I love your Torah is that Kolayam Isichasi. When I meet somebody, I tell them the Dvar Torah. I don't tell them. I don't ask what's the latest on the recount. What's the latest on the Dow Jones? What's the latest with the Knicks? How the Devils doing? The Islanders? What's going on? You have a Sertzach? If I talk about Torah, that proves I really love the Torah. I appreciate the gift of Torah. If every time I have a conversation, my conversation about everything else on the sun but Torah, I have nothing to say. I have no Dvar Torah to say. So parents tell me they're so proud their kids come home from yeshiva, little 6-year-old kids, 27 questions on the parsha. That's great. So the kid comes home with 27 questions on the parsha, but the parent doesn't even know what the parsha is. He didn't bother him in Mavisedra. Doesn't know what's going on. How can the father come to a Shabbos day without some good divrei Torah for the family? And bring his Shabbos, Hilchos Shabbos Seder, learn Hilchos Shabbos at the table. So the proof of, said the proof of how much you love Torah is, Mo'ahavti Torah Secha. How much I love you Torah? Kol Yom Yisichasi. It's my constant conversation. If I talk about it all the time, it's a simon that I talk a love it. Very simple litmus test. So we all pay lip service to love of Torah, but we're flunking the test because we don't talk about it too much. For something you love, boy, we sure ignore it very well. And he says, it also says in Kuf Yutes, Man nimlatu l'chiki imrasecha midvash l'pi. How desirable on to my palate are your words. They're sweeter than honey. The words of Torah are sweeter than honey. That sounds poetic, poetic license. King David was a poet, you know, he's a poet. But sweeter than honey, he meant it, David HaMelech. He meant it, it's mamash sweeter than honey. You know, the Gemara says in it's a Medrash. The Medrash says in Kairach that the reason why saliva is sweet, and saliva is an enzyme which breaks down carbohydrates and makes them sweet. So if you chew a cracker, which is pretty tasteless cracker, certainly not sweet, and you chew it, the enzymes will work on the carbohydrates in a plain, bland, unsalted saltine, and they'll give it a sweet flavor. But that's how it was. So Frank Demesh, why are the enzymes in the mouth sweet? Why are they transforming other things to be sweet? Hashem made it, you know, actually, sometimes you take your mouth, it's really horrible to eat. It's horrible. Oof. If you wouldn't have the enzymes in your mouth to somehow a little bit mitigate some of the bad flavor of something sour, something rancid, it would be much worse. So in general, saliva in general makes everything a little, even horrible things, doesn't make it sweet maybe, it makes it better. And something that's mamish, a carbohydrate, the enzymes make it into a sugar. So why is that so? It says the Medrash, to remind us that the main purpose of the mouth is to learn Torah. And there's nothing sweeter than Torah. And just when I learned the Medrash when I was a kid, I remember I noted that the Dvash and Gematria is 306, and Roke, spit, enzyme, saliva is 306. That's of course why our neighbor is on the side of Route 306, because we are Dvash, this is Honeymoon Lane over here, this is a whole neighborhood over here. That's why Route 306 doesn't go right through the middle of Muncie or at Torah for no reason. It's to tell you that when there's Torah, there's Dvash. And Dvash is nothing to spit at. So, Manimlutu Lechikim Rasechem, Dvash Lefi, it's sweeter than honey. That is the fourth meditation to appreciate the gift of Torah. The fifth meditation is, we should pay attention. Now that we're learning Torah. But he says you gotta learn it real good. You gotta learn the fine print. He says, imagine that the IRS sent you back a form saying, read this form carefully, you might qualify for a big, huge refund. Oh, you're gonna read this very carefully. Now you're gonna read it very carefully. In case you don't understand it, you're gonna hire a CPA for big bucks. They ask him to explain to you the fine print over here, because there's a big chance to get a refund. But he says, imagine King sends you an invitation to come to his big party, to his palace, but you don't understand the instructions how to get to the palace, because you've never been there before. So what are you going to do? You're going to say, well, your wife, well, that's a nice invitation, but I don't understand how to get to this palace. I've never been there before, so I don't think I'll go. You're not going to do that. You're going to call up a friend. You're going to call up somebody. You're not going to give up. You'll call the police. Help. How do I get to the palace? I don't understand the instructions. I've never been there before. I never saw this thing before. I've never been to London. I come from Stratford-on-Avon. I've never been to London, to the big city. Yechlai's Gunish, I come from Lancashire, up to, I come from Northumberland. I don't know anything about the big city of London. I don't know what it means. You go to Buckingham Palace, you go to Regent's Park, tell me how you get there. You're not going to say, well, the king invited me, I don't know how to get there. You're going to ask for instructions, you're going to ask for help. So it comes to Torah, you take one look at Bab Metziah, big fat one. Even the art goes too big, it's four volumes, I mean, it's too much. Who's interested in Bab Metziah? Eichel Metalis, bird, boring, dull stuff. Who's interested in the stuff? But this is the instruction book I get to the king's palace. When you come to Shemayim, after 120, everyone's going to have a harem Bab Metziah. And on Zvachim and Menachas too. And on Uksin and Kalim. Yechayim. The whole Shas. Yishalmi also. Shulchan Aruch. Chosha Mishpat. Orchayim you might know. But Chosha Mishpat. Who knows Chosha Mishpat? I don't know what to talk about. I can't understand it. But it's all pathways to get into the big palace. And to get into the big palace at 120, if we only stayed on the outside of Torah, we were on the periphery of Torah, we get as deep into the Nesifta of the Rekia, the big yeshiva in Shemayim, we will be given access and a seat based on how much we studied in the Nesifta, the Ara, the Nesifta on earth. So if we allow ourselves just to be like peripheral on the periphery of the yeshiva, and we dabble a little bit in Torah every now and then, and we hear a little shir, half an hour here on Sunday mornings, and I come for Shalosh Shuris, you're the rabbi, a little bit in Shalosh Shuris, and oh, now we have a Kiddush, you're the rabbi's very Torah by the Kiddush, it's very good. Torah and Shalom go well with each other, so that's good. So, very nice, our little Vedlan Avram and Hogger, very Zeez the Torah, very nice. And that's it. So, that's all you know the periphery, the mama. So you come to Shemayim, there'll be a big arena for the periphery guys. So don't worry, you'll have a lot of company. You won't be lonely, I guarantee that. We won't be lonely out there. Don't be lonely. Might be cold, but it won't be lonely. And I said, there's a big shir. I see Moshe Rabbeinu up there. I see Rabbi Akiva. I see Abai of a Rav. Can I get into that shir? What are you talking about? You weren't interested in Abai of a Rav in this world. What are you? You're not going to talk to Abai. If you're interested, Vertlich, you know, you're interested in gems in the Torah. So here's the Torah gems out here. We got here on the proof. We got a whole library out here of nice literature over here, and stories. We have legends of the Talmud for you over here, and we have some tales of tzaddikim for you. Olamenu. We have the back covers of Olamenu. All the back covers of Ketantan. We have Ketantan books here, and this is good. This is good. Last sheet, our parsha sheets. Your kids brought home in kindergarten from the Rebbe. You can do the parsha sheets forever, and that's it. Abai Rava. You don't get to see Abai Rava. So he says, imagine the king sent to you a letter, and the king in the letters gave you instructions for great success, how to become in favor with the king. And the letter advised you to become the king's favorite. Avadi would read the letter. You wouldn't say to your wife, oh, hey, we got another letter. We got a letter for the king in the mail today. Big deal. Here. And he put it with the coupons, the free coupons. You know, he comes with the Macy's and the Penny, the Macy's catalog, the Penny Saver. And you just tell, hey, another letter for the king over here. You know, just dump it on the table. Another letter from the king. Of course, the IRS refund that you got in the mail. Hey, rip open. That's not for you. You don't touch this kind of stuff. You stick to the catalogs. I'll get IRS refund. Don't touch that one. That's for me. So the check in the mail that we grab. But the Torah, all this stuff, not so important. So he says you have to learn Torah like you got mamish an invitation. I must confess that many years ago when I was a guest of. It must be his yard site around now. I feel with these days, yard site, I'd be amazed. Because I'm just thinking right now, the chief rabbi of the British Commonwealth, Lord Emmanuel Yisrael Jacobowitz. So I was his guest in his home for a week. Oh, about what? How long was it? 15 years ago, 1995. So he wanted. He was telling me about it, all the times he went to visit the Queen, the Buckingham Palace, the Windsor Castle, and then he gave me a souvenir. He gave me one of the invitations that he got from the Queen, a personal invitation from the Queen to Buckingham Palace, to come to Buckingham Palace. But Buckingham Palace is not as chush as going to Windsor Castle. I'm not going to Buckingham Palace. She has these tea parties a couple times a year for a few thousand people at a time. So, I mean, it's very nice. You know, it's not just for anybody, but it's not such a big deal. That sounds fine. But the Windsor Castle, you get a private invitation, just him and his wife, just Lady Amelie, she's living me well, and him, okay. So, but he was constantly being invited to Buckingham Palace. He gave me an invitation. Oh, I held the invitation. whoa, this is, and it doesn't come from the queen, it comes from Lord Chamberlain, at the behest of the Queen Elizabeth II of the British Commonwealth, Her Majesty invites you to come to a tea party in Buckingham Palace, may something or other. You're actually giving me this invitation, heavy embossed, you know, parchment like paper, very hush with gold. Wow, I can touch the Queen's invitation. I still have it someplace. Not shy, I have it. But the Torah, which is God's invitation, is every single day. We should pick up a safer with trepidation. And you know, an invitation from the Queen, you put away someplace safe. It's fine, we just take it, we leave it on the table, you know, just dump all over the place. You get dirt over them, food over them. They don't put them back in the place. Just a safer. So he says, Ki hu chayecha v'arech yamecha. Torah is our life. It's the length of our days. We should try our best to understand every single word, including the fine print. The Mama, she said, the fine print. Very foolish person doesn't appreciate the chashivas of what Torah really means. The invitation of God to get close to him, to join them, to be in his palace. That's also a map for success in life. That is another thing to think about. I really can't do too many of these every day. I'll do just one more because I can't. It's too much to think about. It's inundated, really. But the next one I'll conclude with. The next one is amazing. I must tell you that some of these, they're all fine and wonderful and what to think about. I'm sure you're jotting it all down so you should remember, and I shouldn't forget. The sixth one is very, very amazing. This is something. Wow. This is a chavis levavis dick. In other words, I mean, this is a chav. This is ingenious. This is something which I don't think you and I could think of. We could think of the importance of Torah, and that we don't take Torah seriously enough. We could have thought of that ourselves. But this one, listen. He says, the chesed and nefesh a person should make, when a person feels that his midas, he has an atiyah, he has a proclivity, he has a propensity to rebel against Hashem. I don't like this. You know, this religion really annoys me after all is said and done. I rip up my tunnel as fast as I can, and I get a shul as fast as I can, and I do the whole stuff. I do it, I give my stock as quickly as I can. I just don't like that. And the other stuff, I can't wait to get out of this shiur. I'm looking at the clock here, this rabbi for you. He always goes overtime. And you know, Sunday morning, I have other things to do Sunday morning. I just want to get out of here. But in general, I really like to rebel against Hashem. I don't like, you know, if I have a choice, glatt kosher or not, it's hard for me. Today you can't even get anything but glatt kosher. It means nothing. But I have a propensity to really rebel. I mamash like to rebel. I love speaking Lashon Hara. I love going to places I shouldn't be going. I love going to nightclubs. I love going to this place. I love going to the races. I love going to Atlantic City. I love going to Foxwoods. It's closer than Atlantic City. That's a big mitzvah to go there because it's closer. But I guess you get scharp seas if you go to Atlantic City. At any rate, I love gambling. A lot of other things I love. I'm not going to talk about them. So what do you do? What do I do to curb my instinctive rebelliousness, my character, which just wants me to, I just want out of here. I want to do my own thing. I want to break out of this religion already. When no one's watching, I do what I feel like. No one's watching, I'm very religious. Yes, sir. And my tzitzis out, I'm very religious. But when I even have tchelis on my tzitzis, I'm so from. But when no one's watching, boy, I want to do a lot of other things. If I get away with it, I would do a lot of stuff. Problem is, I can't get away with it. But if I could, my wife would know. The rabbi wouldn't find out. If someone else wouldn't see me, I would do a lot of stuff. So how does one deal with that? It's a good question. So the Chavis Levavis make the following, he knows that people have this, you know, we have this problem. So he said, here's the Cheshbon. Think about it in your mind. Think about everything that you can in the world, in the whole universe. Think about the basic four elements from which the world is created: fire, ruach, wind, air, mayim, water, and ofar, earth. Those are the four basic elements, you know, according to philosophy, that's the four basic elements: fire, air, water, earth. And think of all the things that are created from a combination of the above. Think about the planets, the stars, think about the trees, think about the water, the oceans. Did you ever hear that a planet should rebel against the Rebbeinu Shel Olam? As we say, Tak and Kish Levana, the planets don't rebel against the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. The sun, never, you can predict the sun's orbit to a nanosecond, what it'll be in thousands of years from now, and what it was thousands of years ago. The sun, the moon, every star, I mean, just talk to an astronomer. They are absolutely predictable. There's nothing that, everything in the heaven is predictable. They don't rebel. As we say in Kiddush Levana, as I always say again and again, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Hashem Ma'amareh Baruch Shechokim. Hashem created the skies with His word, with a ruach piv called Tzavoyim, and all the legions with Hashem's, the breath of His mouth. Choyk Uzman L'san Lehem. Hashem gave an exact time for them. Shelo Yishanu Es Tafkidem. They should not deviate from their appointed tasks. Sosim Usmeichem Lasas Unsan Koinam Poyel Emes Shepulasei Emes. God is the true maker, and everything He made is true and exact and perfect and predictable. So you never, every tree is predictable. It's predictable how trees are going to grow. And you can look at the rings of the tree, on the redwood trees, you can see they grew exactly for the last 1,000 years. You just cut, drop down the tree, don't let an environmentalist see you. And you'll see the rings, you'll know every single year it's predictable. And it really, of course, sometimes the rings are smaller, some are bigger based on the waterfall, based on different situations, but it's all there. So you know it's predictable that a certain amount of rain will make a certain width of the bark and of the new layers of tree, and it's predictable and it's going to happen. You know that if you give your lawn a certain amount of fertilizer and you give it a certain amount of water, it's going to grow in a certain way. It's predictable. The grass does not rebel. Of course, if there's no water, the grass is not going to do anything. But if you give everything scientifically what it's supposed to get, or you have hydroponics and it's in a sealed environment in a greenhouse, and you're growing things hydroponically where it's absolutely totally under your power and control, exactly the amount of moisture and the nutrition and the heat and the sunlight you let in, it's mamish. It's never in the history of the world that one grass should tell the rest of the grass, grass of the world, rise up against humanity. They're always stepping on us. Tread not on me. No longer are we going to suffer this indignation, this indignities that mankind and the animals are always stepping on us, chewing at us, eating at us. This is terrible. We've heard of French revolutions, American revolutions, Chinese revolutions, Russian revolutions. Never heard of a grass revolution. We heard of grassroots, but never grass revolutions. You never rebel? Everything in the Bria does exactly what its tafkid is. Hayim kora pam she'achameyam himra as devar v'hefer as prisai. Did any of them ever break the covenant? And what would happen? What would happen, Taka, if one day all the grass decided not going to grow anymore? If one component of this totally interrelated earth and cosmos would stop, you should know, he says, this whole system, you might look to you, the star, someplace out there, mamish 10 billion light years away, which is mind-boggling how far it is, and this star would not function like it should, you should know it would have cosmic effect even down here on Earth. You don't realize it. And he says if one area on Earth, if all the trees would just stop being trees, for Shteytan, the world would shut down immediately. The trees are constantly cleansing the environment, and the air goes through it, and they produce new carbon dioxide, and all kinds of stuff. And the trees would rebel, and the photosynthesis would stop. The whole world would come to a halt. Could not be. Could not be. And he's still going with a concept of the world as being the earth as being the center of the world, and so the world when the sun, we believe in the heliocentric world, that's the sun. How do you say the earth is the center? Terracentric, egocentric. That's me. Earthocentric. What's the word for earth as a center? I don't know what the fancy. What? Geocentric is the word for the earth as a center. Geocentric. Anyway, so he was going, this is pre-Copernican, and he was still, he was writing this again in the late 1100s, maybe 1200, and he's going with what the Gemara said, the rabbis hold, that earth is the center of everything, which really there's truth to that too, but I'm not going to discuss that today. So he says, imagine that all the different planets, the sun that's going around the earth, where everything, the whole world, the whole universe circles earth, so if that would stop, earth would stop. And if the sea would rebel, and the sea would rebel, and suddenly the waters of the sea, which ordinarily are kept in by the sea, would suddenly rebel and go cover the earth again, like they did before the Rebbeinu Shel Olam put them in the oceans, the world cannot survive. But even more, he says, think about your own body. What would happen if your own body would rebel against you? Now, the body never rebelled against anybody. People have chas on strokes, or they get paralyzed, they have heart attack. That's not the body rebelling against us. The body is finally just reminding us that we abused it enough, and it all comes from our abuse. It never happened that just one day, for no good reason, the eyes decide not to open this morning. The eyes were tired. They're not opening. Never happened that eyes aren't opening this morning. Unheard of. Never happened that, you know, that the legs just stop one morning and say, we're not getting out of bed. We're tired. We're not getting out of bed. We want a vacation. You never got noticed in your legs for a week saying, we want a vacation. You ran around too much. You danced too hard at the chasna. We want a vacation also. You took a vacation. We want a vacation. You ever hear anybody in the Bria that his legs send him a message, we are on vacation. Impossible. So too he says, just like it's impossible to conceive of anything in the world rebelling against its master, so too how can we, human beings, servants of Hashem, conceive of rebelling against Hashem? And here he gives his mashal. Listen to this mashal. I mean, this is a brilliant mashal, I think. Once upon a time, there was a king. And the king had a general. And the general was very precious to this king. Very important. So, he sends the general out to war. And the general is surrounded by all of his underlings. All of his lower soldiers and officers. His entourage. So the king says, listen, he says to the entourage. And he says to the general too. General, you're so precious to me. You have to take care of yourself. You have to watch out for your safety. So therefore, when you come to a river, I want you to make sure that you put on a life jacket. I want to make sure that you don't swim over the river. You must take a boat, a very safe boat. Don't you dare ford the river with a horse, because you might drown. There might be a swift current that realize it. There might be a whirlpool. I demand of you, general and servant to the general, that you must see to it that whenever you're by a river, you must cross it in the safest possible way, following my instructions for a boat, for a seasoned captain, for life jackets, life vests, and utmost care, and you must have a compass, and you have to have a map before you go to the river. I cannot spare a general. If you saw, if you ever read Life of Lincoln, that before Lincoln couldn't find himself a general in the Civil War for 3.5 years till Ulysses S. Grant came along, and he was begging Hooker, McClellan, Burnside, no good next thing. He was losing hundreds of thousands of men. You would see what one good general is worth. One good general is worth an awful lot. I still to this day, I don't know military, so I don't understand why these other fellows are such bumblers and fumblers, but yeah, I guess. As all he does, the Union men would fall like flies. The war could have been over a long time before if an aggressive, proper general had been found. So they were once they found a good general, so you want to keep him. So the Melech says this general has to be guarded at all costs. So they come to the river. And the general says, so the guy says, okay, general, we have a boat over here. Please put on the life jacket. You know, put on the life preserver. We go over this river real slow. It's not a boat, it's a slow boat. So he says, what's going on over here? I don't put on, me, the general, can you see me? Can you see George Patton wearing a life? George Patton doesn't wear a life vest. Can you see General MacArthur coming out and famous when he comes back to Manila, you know, he's walking in the water there, he's famous, well, you know, with his corn cob pipe and showing the world that I have returned, you know, he's coming back and he's going to wear a life jacket, you got to make a dramatic entryway wearing your finest, you know, uniform and looking like a real hero. You don't wear life jackets and you don't go on a boat. So now the general says, listen, I go on my horse, I have my white steed, I have a job, I don't wear life jackets, I don't go on boats, with that's a namby-pamby people, boats are for kids, you know. A general goes over the river, I go like a hero. I'm not listening. So they say to him, how could you do that? How can you, you know, think about it, if you're going to rebel and not obey the king who's bigger than you, because you're Gaiva, so what do you expect from us? Do you think we're going to be faithful to you? What's going to stop us from rebelling against you? If you don't give us a good role model, if you don't give us a good example of absolute obedience and surrender, then we're not going to listen to you either. So So our obedience to you is predicated upon your obedience to our ultimate leader, who is the king. And if you don't obey him, we're not going to obey you. Says the Chaz Levavos, that's exactly how our body and the world, this is a formula. The world is here to serve man, but only to the extent that man serves God. To the extent that a man never rebels against the Rabbi Shalom, to the extent that a man doesn't select what he chooses, what he likes, the Yiddishkeit doesn't like, but he absolutely surrenders to Hashem, to that, and serves Hashem the King, then everything in the world, first his own body, and then everything else in the world, the plant world, the animal world, and everything in the world will serve that man to the extent that the man is the general. God is the king. Every human being is like a general. Every one of us is like a general. And everything under us, our clothing, our trees, our air, the water, the ganze Welt, is servants to serve in our army. But when we go across the water, Hashem said there's a way to do it. You know, when you, there's a way, this is what you have to do. If you want to get safely across, don't be such a Balgaiv and say, well, you know, King says I should make sure we wear a yarmulke all the time to show that I'm his general. I got to work, I don't wear a yarmulke. Yeah, that's unnecessary. I look like a guy, okay. So now it's okay if I go out to business lunches, I eat this a business lunch, that business lunch. So what? The rest of the world is telling you, what are you talking about? You're a general and the king. To the extent that you're obedient to the king, we'll be obedient to you. You're not obedient to us, we're going to rebel against you. This is the formula. He says, so they say to him, listen to the Gavaldi Galoshan, Ato Asar Masal Mitzvah Melech, you general, you are oblivious to the command of the king. Alech lefache ten yisnai yitcho echad me itonu kama sha'ato es nahakta itonu. You should be afraid that one of us will treat you like you treated the king. Maybe we'll rebel against you. When the king heard this, so he woke up from his nimas alim, from being oblivious to the king, v'choza me'amishge halazu, and he repented from this mishigas. Zog the chavos levavos, and I conclude with this: Kein ata ochi, hagedo, my dear brother, tell me, hayam korei pam she'echa me'berecha over amasha barit tziveloy desecha, kasher shtamashta boy. Did it ever happen that your hand didn't follow instructions? You stretched out the hand to pick up a pen, and the hand didn't go, and the pen didn't hold the pen properly. Right? You know that the Rabbanu Shlomo made a tnai with the Torah, that to the extent that hisna b'tayrosa mehemna im navadaisa, if you serve Hashem, Hashem made a deal. Os kol ma sheyeshna ba'olam yiyeh kofav l'reshus l'retzayncha. If we submit ourselves to Hashem, then the whole world will submit itself to us. But if we defy the word of Hashem, so even though we're a general, but we're only the general, not the king, so the rest of the world does come oilam v'kol hashabo yavar or tzaynucha, like it says in parashat v'koisai and other places in the whole tzaynucha. And just to conclude this thought, there's my favorite medrash, as I'm sure I've shared with you many times. The medrash embraces Rabbah, Parsha Yud. On the sixth day, the end of the day, was the completion of heaven and earth and all of its legions, all the inhabitants. So the medrash Barichas gives examples how the whole world was made. The world couldn't be concluded until Adam Yishuv was created, because the whole world was only created for man, and to the extent that man serves Hashem, the world will serve man. Mashal, he gives the great Mashal Amar Rav Hoshea. He gave a drasha like this. It's like a king who came to Medina, came to a certain one of his provinces, and all the people lined up for a parade, and they were screaming hooray to the king. The king loved it, he enjoyed it, so he told his minister, he said, give tax breaks to the people in this Medina. New roads, send them food, send them money, give them special privileges. The next time he came, the people were very proud of themselves. There was Zochas only privileges. So no one even bothered coming out to applaud the king and to welcome him. He says, what? They ignore me? Take back the privileges, destroy the roads, take back the food, it's over. So too says the Medrash. Kach. Before the sin, before the Messiah, all the mazalas, all the heavenly bodies went quickly and the short. Was short and sweet and quick. And therefore everything happened quicker. And the fruits grew quicker. And women gave birth quicker. They have to go within that 9 months. Chava gave birth in an hour. Mishachata, but when Adam sinned, the whole world rebelled against him. And the Rebbeinu Shel Olam made it that all the mazalas went a long way, not short way, real slow, and without enjoying it. And they didn't go with such eagerness as well. Derech Arucha Mesinus. They went slow, a long way, and a slow way. Because this is the aside that the world serves us as we serve Hashem. The Medrash gives many, many other fantastic examples of this. How everything in the world is made to serve us. The Medrash gives a mashal. He says, Afilu dvarim she'ata ro'yeis anshein yisein ba'olam. Even things that look like extra, unnecessary. Like flies. Who needs only flies? Parusha, gnats, fleas, mosquitoes. Come on, who needs all this stuff? Who needs all this stuff? No, nothing is for nothing. Everything you see, the Rabbi Shnod is a shlichus. Even with a snake, even with a gnat, even with a fly, even with a tadpole, even with a salamander, everything, a grasshopper, everything's from the Rabbi Shnod is here to serve us. Even if, every blade of grass. There was once a man, said the Medrash, that the guy was walking innocently in the grass. And he saw a very nice piece of grass, long grass. It was very pretty, and he was skilled with his hands. So he managed to have a wreath of grass around his head. A little while later, along came a big snake, a big scorpion, and it was about to bite him. And he just grabbed the snake and killed it. Meanwhile, as this happened, a man walked by and sees the dead snake and sees him and says, "What happened over here?" He says, "I killed the snake." He says, "Well, you know, this snake, no one ever kills it. How can you kill the snake? The snake is the most lethal, horrible, dangerous snake. You can't kill the snake without getting killed yourself." So the man, the stranger, now looks at him and says, "What's on your head?" He says, "Oh, that's a wreath of grass I just made myself." He says, "Let me take a look at that." "Huh?" He says, "This is a special grass which protects against snake's poison." The guy says, "Really? You mean this is such a poisonous snake?" And the guy stretches out his hand, the one who had the wreath originally, stretches his hand, and just touching the snake, he fell in a faint, because the snake's poison was so lethal, just touching the snake was enough that so toxic that pushed the guy just fainted from shock, from toxic shock, because he took the wreath over his head. So the Medrash said, "This you see that Hashem created everything in the world to protect us, and as long as the man was zoicha, he had this wreath of grass on his head, and the snake couldn't touch him. Everything is there to protect us, and we should appreciate that. But it's here on the one tonight, to the extent that we protect the Kvod Hashem, the world is here to protect us. Everything is a shlichus." Everything is doing a shlichus. To the extent that we do shlichus for Hashem, and the world does a shlichus for us. This is the meditation of the Chavos. I think it's a very, very fascinating meditation. Okay, Rabbi Sai, I will be here, Mitzvah Hashem, Be'ez Hashem, next Sunday, despite the fact that I'll be at a good community.